hardball hitting with a baseball bat. Kick up your heels, kid, and leave them all flat. What does it mean to be American?
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly on voting rights and election law with a dose of hope sprinkled in. Every 10 years, the U.S. conducts the census, where it counts every person in America. States then use that data to draw new maps for their legislative bodies in a process known as redistricting. Many states, Kentucky included, allow their politicians to draw the maps, so the politicians are essentially choosing their voters. When they draw skewed maps to help them win the next election, that's called gerrymandering. Most people agree that the Kentucky Republicans drew a severely gerrymandered map in this past redistricting cycle, helping to turn their majority into a supermajority. Democrats challenged the state house and congressional maps, and the case went all the way to the Kentucky Supreme Court, where the court upheld the maps as drawn. But Justice Michelle Keller of the Kentucky Supreme Court dissented to part of that ruling. We are so excited to welcome Justice Keller to discuss the case. Justice, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thank you so much. I hope I'm the good, not the bad or the ugly. I know the listeners can't see me, but I'll just throw that in to start. Happy to be here.
So before we dive into the case, let's just talk about the nature of having an elected judiciary. You know, the Kentucky courts still elect their judges on a nonpartisan basis. Your last election in 2022 kind of seemed to get partisan, at least in terms of the issues that were discussed. How do we keep the judiciary nonpartisan, or at least the appearance of nonpartisan?
Well, let me comment on my 2022 race. It was only partisan on one side. I did not go partisan. I made an effort not to, and I made an effort to comply with our constitutional requirements. And so our Kentucky Constitution, Section 117, calls for the nonpartisan election of all judges throughout the Commonwealth, as well as the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court justices. And I believe in all aspects of our well-drafted Constitution, and especially that one. I do think the election of judges and justices is a good thing if we can adhere to the constitutional guardrails. And that's where the difficulty comes in. I believe that we need some more robust and immediate reaction to those candidates who do not comply with the Constitution and the judicial ethics opinions that have been outlined in reference to these campaigns. And for instance, from my race, my opponent was sanctioned, or at least not sanctioned, but called in front of the Judicial Conduct Commission, but never even appeared, just decided to sue the commission in federal court. And I believe that case is still pending. That election was decided November 7th of 2022. So you can see that when the culmination or disposition of an election contest is so far out from the election, it really doesn't have any teeth. So I do think it's good for Kentuckians to know their judges, and I don't mind being accountable to the voters. I just believe wholeheartedly in a nonpartisan elected judiciary.
And do you think a different system, you know, federal judges are appointed, and it's not to suggest that there's no partisanship in those appointments. Of course there is, but wouldn't some sort of system where it's, going through a process that tries to take partisanship out and maybe an appointed judiciary would be better?
I don't think that going to the federal system would be better. And here's why. There's also a lot of criticism today among just everyday folks about federal appointments, which, as you know, Professor, are lifetime appointments. And that's a long time for any judge to serve answering to no one. You know, we can argue about what the framers envisioned when they put that in the United States Constitution. But I would say that when our United States Constitution was drafted, people didn't regularly live into their 80s and even 90s and work into their 80s on a regular basis. So I think the appointment of judges has difficulty as well. And if you would just take a handful of Kenton Countyans, my home county, and ask them who their judges are, I bet a lot of them could tell you who some of their local judges are, and perhaps even me, because I live here, even though I'm on the Supreme Court and our Court of Appeals judges. But unless they work or practice in the court system, few of them will know who the federal judges are. They're very far removed from everyday Kentuckians and everyday Americans. And maybe that's a good thing, but let's remember that 97% of the litigation, whether it be civil or criminal, occurs in the state courts. So once again, I think Kentucky got it right with the nonpartisan election. I just think we have to do whatever we can to maintain those guardrails.
Yeah. And of course, part of the struggle Kentucky has had are some rulings from the federal courts about Kentucky's judicial ethics rules and what the state can and cannot prevent candidates from saying under the First Amendment. So one reason you agreed to come on this show is you told me specifically you believe the general public needs to understand what the courts do. So how do you make your work on the court more accessible?
Well, I think that's first and foremost by being accessible on a personal level. Whenever I have an opportunity, I'm invited to speak to a civic group or any kind of group of students or whoever it may be. If I can work it in, I do. All of those things are extracurricular, if you will, from my work as a justice on the court. But I believe every time I interface with a group of citizens, whether it be a Rotary Club or a leadership group or a group of students in grade school all the way up through college, I'm influencing those people as to the work of the court and explaining the work of the court and how we fit in as the third branch in a three-part democracy, if you will. So I think that's one of the main ways that, you know, I personally feel like I can do that. I think the courts need to recognize the premise that we really derive our power from the confidence of the people. And if the people lose confidence in their court system, then we're in trouble, I think, as a democracy.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's discuss Graham versus Adams. That's the partisan gerrymandering case your court decided about the Kentucky maps. The decision came down in December 2023 that upheld the maps as drawn. First, full disclosure for our listeners, I wrote a friend of the court brief, known as an amicus brief, to urge the court to invoke the state constitution robustly when considering these issues about whether the map was fair or not. Well, in my view, the court did not invoke the state constitution robustly, regardless of the actual outcome. I thought the analysis was too narrow on the state constitution. But let's just get in a little bit of inside baseball, if you will, on the workings of the court to the extent you can share. You know, how much are those kinds of written submissions from outside people, from law professors, organizations, or other individuals? How useful is that? And just, you know, talk a little bit about how the sausage is made when coming up with a decision like this.
Well, first, I thank you for your amicus brief. And I do think amicus briefs bring value to the discussion and value to my study anyway. And I'm only speaking for myself. Your viewers need to understand there are seven justices, and I also will refrain from being personally critical of them because I'm the only one speaking today, and I have the greatest respect and collegiality that I want to maintain on our court. But I believe that when an amicus brief is written, depending upon the content, it may be more persuasive in one case than in another. I felt that yours was persuasive on the overarching constitutional issues that it highlighted, or sections that it highlighted. And I also would agree that the majority didn't really focus on that part of our Constitution. And in my dissent, which we can talk about later, I focused on another section, and I can tell you why if we want to talk about that later. But you know, as we were working through the briefs and preparing for the oral argument and sitting through the argument and asking questions, and I'm listening to the questions of my fellow justices, you know, you can kind of see where things are headed. And then after each oral argument, we go into the conference room and we take an initial vote around the table as to where we stand on whatever case it is, you know, whether it be criminal, civil, or a constitutional or more government interest case like this one was. And so we know before we leave that day where our colleagues are. They may not stay there. We always reserve the right to change. But if there's a majority that emerges from that initial conversation, and usually there is, the Chief Justice will then assign a justice of that majority to begin writing the opinion. And that's how it gets started. So I knew from the get-go, after the oral arguments, that I may be in a minority position on this case. So in reference to your particular brief on Section 6 in particular, I found historical references and arguments very interesting and I think accurate, but I felt strategically for me as a member of the court, perhaps trying to pick up a vote or be persuasive, Section 33 was a better place for me to focus my analysis.
So before we get into a little bit about the details of your dissent, let's make sure our listeners understand what the court actually said, right? So the court rejected the challenges to the map. It said redistricting is a partisan enterprise and the legislature is a partisan body. And so it's no surprise that, you know, because they're the entity that is in charge of drawing maps, the result is going to be partisan. And they said there's no basis for saying the maps went too far under the state constitution. Now, I'll just speak for myself. One of the most frustrating aspects of the majority opinion as someone who studies election law was the difference between what the trial judge in the court said and the Kentucky Supreme Court's majority. The trial judge said, this map is so severely gerrymandered. There's really no argument against it. But that judge wasn't sure the law was there, essentially, that the state constitution prohibited it. The majority opinion of your court said, well, we're not sure if the map is really badly gerrymandered. There could be a map that would go too far under the state constitution, but it's not this. So how do we reconcile those theories or those approaches to a case like this?
Well, I think we can't reconcile it in this case. If we could, we wouldn't have what I would call plurality opinion, four different opinions written on this subject from this case. But let me back up just a little bit. I would say, as I acknowledged in my dissent, and I think others would as well on the court, that there is gerrymandering, and it's partisan gerrymandering that's occurring here. I think the $64,000 question is, when is too much gerrymandering too much? When is enough too much? When does it hit the too much spot? And that's the part that I felt the majority didn't really explain, and I felt frustrated that perhaps we needed to at least have a voice, that there is an argument to be made that even if it is a political question, and it is, and there's no doubt that Democrats did it when they were in control, Republicans are doing it now when they're in control. So I'm not being partisan in this discussion.
Yeah, and my brief, as you know, was also not partisan. It wasn't in favor of one side or the other. It was in favor of the state constitution.
Correct. And that's why I chose a specific Section 33 that talked about how many times, if ever, you should split counties, how many times you should append one county to another. And even though our constitution, as you noted in your brief, was written in 1890 and ratified in 1891 under very different population status in the Commonwealth, that Section 33 remains a section of our Constitution that has equal weight to any other. We could spend a whole podcast talking about Section 6 and free and equal elections, because I think that's such an interesting avenue here. And our court has used the state Constitution before. As you know, we used Section 14 when a prior court, many different members than on this current court struck down the medical review panels. And we also referenced the state constitution when we dealt with right to work and other constitutional questions. So the state constitution is up to interpretation by seven different justices. I have to respect where my brothers and sisters are in their analysis. But for me, Section 33 is pretty direct. And I think they did that in this case. The experts who brought in alternate maps and alternate ways that redistricting could be accomplished satisfied the burden of proof that we could more, I guess, honestly adhere to Section 33. Mm-hmm.
That's the provision that says you shouldn't split county lines when drawing
yes.
a map.
Yes, that we could do that in a more perfect way. There was a way to do that. And I think that seemed to be, to me, as I was writing and thinking through this, a concept that people could understand because, you know, lawyers and judges are used to expert witnesses and proof and data and scientists coming in and putting numbers before the judges and the juries. And this really is what happened in this case. They had experts testify, well, here's how the map was drawn, but here's how the map could be drawn, and here's the differences, and here's what it means. And so that's where I kind of tried to focus my dissent and apply that to the Constitution. You know, I ended up being by myself there, and so obviously it's not where I would want to land in this case, but I feel good about what I wrote.
Mm-hmm. So let's back out a little bit from the weeds of the redistricting case to ask a question I think is fundamental to democracy. Why should people vote? What's the point?
Well, I think that obviously when we look and talk about things like gerrymandered districts and the polarization of just the electorate and dot discourse and the whole, just the way we are, I think people could ask that question, why should I vote? But if we don't continue to vote, it's certainly not going to get any better. Voting is a right, and those rights have been secured by the blood and by the lives of many, many Americans and Kentuckians who went before us. So to me, it's a sacred right, and you can't take it for granted, and you need to exercise it, even if you're exercising it in an imperfect forum. And I think that we could agree today that we think maybe this is an imperfect forum, but it's not a reason not to vote. The only way to change what the current status is to vote in change. I mean, even one of the opinions said that blatantly. This is a ballot box issue. This is a political question that's not even justiciable. And for the non-lawyers that are listening, you know, it shouldn't even be decided by a court. I kind of think that's what the second North Carolina Supreme Court said when they had the rehearing on their redistricting gerrymandering case. But so we have at least one justice that feels that way. It's not even a justiciable question. Another justice that felt that there wasn't any standing. So gerrymandering, if you will, was only part of what was considered in this case. But there's no way the districts will get, there'll be any change or there'll be any influence on what the Kentucky voters think about gerrymandering unless they exercise their vote.
Yeah, and even if voters are voting in a skewed map under a skewed system, you know, the power of the electorate still theoretically could win out, even if it's so much harder to do so. Justice Michelle Keller of the Kentucky Supreme Court, what a treat to be able to speak with a member of the state's highest court about an issue recently decided and to inform our listeners more about how this all works. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate it.
Well, Josh, that was a really interesting conversation you had with Justice Keller. As we do in each segment of Democracy Optimist, we like to look at an election law highlight. What do you have for this segment?
Today, we'll talk about independent redistricting commissions. The Kentucky legislature draws its own maps, which means that the politicians can choose their voters, not the other way around. But 10 states use a commission for congressional maps, and 15 states use a commission for state legislative maps. Some of these commissions aren't truly independent, however, as they include various partisan elected officials. Ohio is an example of that. But in any event, studies show that maps drawn by independent commissions are typically much more fair. Over 1 in 5 Americans now live in states with an independent redistricting commission, which includes both blue and red states. Are these constitutional? Well, in 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Arizona's independent redistricting commission, but that decision was 5-4, and the court's composition has changed significantly since then. We'll just have to wait for another challenge to see if the court will reverse itself. But for now, independent redistricting commissions seem to be a better way to draw maps.
All right, and give us our fun election fact.
I'm often asked where the term gerrymandering comes from. In March 1812, the Boston Gazette published a political cartoon that depicted a new species of monster dubbed the gerrymander. The original gerrymander was based on a mangled voting district in Massachusetts that the Democratic-Republican Party had drawn to entrench their leaders. The initial term was actually gerrymander, which was a combination of the name of Massachusetts governor at the time, Elsbridge Gerry, who allowed the redistricting to happen, and the shape of the monster, a salamander. Gerry was a founding father and also served as vice president under James Madison. Over the years, the term has morphed into gerrymandering. 18th century England was rampant with gerrymandering, and the U.S. has kept up with the practice since colonists arrived. However, there is a major difference between what gerrymandering was then and what it has become now, with technology and data, which can accurately predict votes down to a street. So gerrymandering has occurred since the founding of our country, but today's gerrymandering is much more precise. And here's one other interesting tidbit from Kentucky. If you turn the most recent congressional map that the legislature passed on its side, it almost looks identical to that original cartoon, that original gerrymander for Massachusetts in 1812.
Isn't that something? Amazing. So what is one thing we can do to support democracy?
As the topic of our discussion in this segment has been gerrymandering, I recommend listeners visit the website All About Redistricting. Just put that in your search engine and it'll pop up. That website, All About Redistricting, provides a great overview of the redistricting process in each state. Then talk to your elected representatives about the need for independent redistricting commissions.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU. I'm gonna read them my books, I'm gonna wrap them up tight. I can educate myself on the fight.